Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Carving It Up Live right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. As always, I'm Bryson Carver. Very excited to be with you on this Friday. Yeah, I was thinking Saturday for a half second. It feels like Saturday because we are on the eve of the NBA playoffs, which you know what that means. Playoffs weaknesses. I've done this for the last two postseasons. This will be my third that I've done it, talking about the biggest weaknesses, the biggest reason why the team in question will not win the championship. We'll include the two play-in teams, the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Sacramento Kings and the New Orleans Pelicans on the Western Conference side, and the Bulls and the Heat on the Eastern Conference side, as well, just including everybody, obviously, because 50% chance any of those teams will be in the postseason come tomorrow's bracket begin. Very excited about that. Also, going to get into my Golden State Warriors. You thought I was done talking about Golden State, and for the vast majority of the playoffs, that will be the case. However, I do have to say this. There is a couple of moves, while not, albeit likely, that the Warriors can and should make, and really an important offseason for them in terms of deciding what they want to do, what they want their identity to be as a franchise moving forward. That in about a half hour. Also, Joel Embiid, this is far and away, not even close, the biggest postseason of his NBA career. He's accomplished a lot, two scoring titles, an MVP, massive postseason coming up for him. I'll detail that in about 12 minutes. Really, the nuances, like this could be a carving up the context segment, really, in all honesty, but we do those on Wednesdays. Also, most importantly, playoff predictions, first round predictions, rather. We're not doing the whole bracket, not March Madness style, but my playoff predictions, first round, four series out west, four series out east, even including the possibility of the two playing tournament teams being in, seeing how they match against the one seeds, the Thunder and the Heat. The Thunder and the Celtics in either conference. Couple comments off the bat. John Rivera, Fan Perspective Podcast. First one here. Shout out to John. John, let's go Bulls. Well, listen, the Bulls on the road in Miami, only a point underdogs against the Heat. So very excited about that game tonight. That's going to be the first of the two play-in tournament games. But first, I think it's fair to say that the most anticipated playoff series is last year's Western Conference, or really a rematch this year of last year's Western Conference Finals. Los Angeles Lakers, Denver Nuggets, and stars galore. MVP, actually two-time MVP Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, who's gotten the nickname Playoff Jamal, and for good reason. LeBron James, who I and many agree is the greatest basketball player of all time. We can argue that another day. He's no lower than two. No question about that. Anthony Davis, who I think is one of the best defenders of this generation. How he doesn't have a Defensive Player of the Year award and Rudy Gobert has three, maybe four, is a crime. That's another story for another day. Plenty of stars, plenty of very well-accomplished players in this series. But the star of stars, while Jokic may be the best players, is and is always going to be as long as he's in the NBA, LeBron James. And I was thinking about LeBron, thinking about this tenure with the Lakers. So, fun fact, this is actually the longest stay he's had with the franchise outside of his first stint in Cleveland that he's had in his career. So, his first stint in Cleveland was 7 years, 4 years in Miami, 4 years back in Cleveland. This is now year six with the Los Angeles Lakers, the purple and gold, the most decorated franchise in the NBA. And I was thinking again, would we call LeBron's tenure in LA a success? I would say yes, because if they missed the playoffs every single year he was there but got a championship one of those years, then it's a success. Now, that's not been the case because they have gotten a title and they've made multiple other playoff appearances. But wanted to put this up here. All stats provided by our friends at StatMuse. All graphics provided by my man Alfred Parsar Jr. Shout out to Alfred. This is really interesting to me, okay? 2019, first year in the LeBron era, they missed the playoffs. Now, LeBron missed a lot of time. I think he had like a groin injury or something, so they missed the playoffs. 2020, won the championship in the bubble. People tried to delegitimize the bubble. Oh, it's a Mickey Mouse ring, a cubic zirconium ring. Folks, a bunch of other teams were in the finals, were in the bubble that year. We wouldn't have taken credit. Let's be real. We wouldn't have taken a credit away from Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers or James Harden and Russell Westbrook and the Rockets or Giannis and the Bucks. We wouldn't have. We need to give a credit to the Lakers. That was a very difficult championship, very difficult circumstances with the bubble. But 2021, sure, there were injuries, but out in round one. 2022, in large part due to the Westbrook experiment, missed the playoffs entirely. Last year looked like it was going to go, you know, to hell in a handbasket again, but they made some trades. They moved Westbrook, brought in some guys, made the conference finals. This year, we'll see. So it's been a very uneven, it's been really kind of a roller coaster. Missed the playoffs, win the championship, out in round one, missed the playoffs. Conference finals, We'll see what happens this year. But LeBron, as we all know, is a very calculated individual. He looks at all of his options very carefully. And there's a chance he has a player option this year. He could be a free agent in the summer of 2024. So basically, two, three months from now, late June, early July of this year. And if LeBron, let's just say, I'll give my predictions for the playoffs and obviously in this series later in the show. But let's say the Lakers get knocked out in round one by the Nuggets. And it's not a seven-game war. But I don't think the Nuggets are going to sweep the Lakers again. I do not see that happening two straight years in a row, barring injury. Knock on wood, that doesn't happen. But let's say Denver takes them out in five, gentlemen sweep. Or let's just say it even goes six, but it's not the typical six-game, back and forth, tug of war, push and pull, and then somebody eventually gets the edge in the end before it gets to a win or go home game seven. Let's say it's like a six-game series the Nuggets played last year. When they played Phoenix and it's like, that's the deepest a team took the Nuggets. The Suns took them six games. Watch the series. Game one was a blowout. Game two, Denver pulled away. Suns won game three and four to their credit. And in games five and six, the Nuggets absolutely smashed the Phoenix Suns. Absolutely destroyed them in games five and six, including game six being in Phoenix. If it's a series like that, like it's kind of close through four, sort of, and then games five and six, the Nuggets win comfortably. And LeBron James, who, assuming he plays next year, and I think he will, I do think, by the way, you know, major story, this, I think next year could be LeBron's last year in the NBA. The whole Bronny story, we'll see. I think a year from now, we could be talking about LeBron's last game is in the National Basketball Association. But assuming he plays next year, LeBron, well, let's see. I'm going into year 22. I'm going to be 40 years old in December of this calendar year and next NBA season. And let's just say for the sake of argument, it's five games. Or it goes six games with Denver. LeBron will be looking around saying, I've lost eight of my last 10 playoff games to the same team, and they're not going anywhere. And for the record, Oklahoma City's young and getting better. Minnesota, while I don't love their pieces, Anthony Edwards, just getting better. Dallas, Luka, not going anywhere anytime soon. He looks around the Western Conference, where, by the way, not to bring the Warriors into this, but the Golden State Warriors won 46 games and were the 10 seed. That's how deep the conference is. And Houston's getting better. And Wemby's. And LeBron looks around and says, is this my best opportunity to win a championship? Because let's be honest, that's what LeBron's going for at this stage in his career. Records, he's got him. He already passed Kareem. He's top 10 in virtually every major statistical category. Points, rebounds, points, assists, rebounds. He's in the top 20. What's the next stat mean for LeBron James? If he needs to accomplish another statistical milestone to convince people he's the GOAT, then he's either the GOAT or pretty darn close. MVPs, he's past that stage of his career. He's already got four. Like, he may go for Defensive Player of the Year. I heard him on the shop or whatever it was the other day lamenting the fact that he should have won in 2013. LeBron, I'm with you. I agree. Probably not going to win Defensive Player of the Year at age 40. Money, well, let's see. He's a billionaire. He's set for life. Generations upon generations of wealth in the James family, rightfully so. This point's just about the rings for King James. And will he look at the Lakers and say, well, let's see, AD's getting older. The coach is terrible in my eyes, and I think in LeBron's eyes as well. I think he absolutely LeBron would be a better coach for the Lakers than Darvin Ham. The roster's good. You know, Austin Reeves is a good player. D'Angelo Russell's good, but very streaky. And then he got a bunch of, you know, one-year deal guys, Gabe Vincent and, you know, Hachimura. Well, Hachimura is a solid player. I like Hachimura. Christian Wood, Jackson Hayes. Does he look around that and says, is this the best opportunity I have? I think there's three options for LeBron James this summer, assuming the Lakers go out in round one. I think the first, and I think the most likely destination, is the Philadelphia 76ers. So Philadelphia and Daryl Morey, in my mind, and I said it at the time, and I definitely say it today, absolutely fleeced the Los Angeles Clippers in every way, shape, and form. You get James Harden, we get some of these nice, you know, ancillary pieces, picks, and a ton of cap space. Well, you think Philadelphia, they think, listen, Philly could go out and run. We'll see, but you think a team with Tyrese Maxey, Joel Embiid obviously being the head of that snakes. Embiid, Maxey, Tobias Harris would go from being the third best player to the fourth best player if LeBron shows up. Kelly Oubre's there. They got, you know, Paul Reed's a decent backup center, some nice pieces. And oh, by the way, I get to go back to the Eastern Conference where I'm at 8 straight finals. And by the way, Nick Nurse is a championship winning coach. Due to salary cap reasons, due to fit reasons, due to the fact that it's out East. I think that's the most likely destination for LeBron James if he were to leave the Lakers, which frankly, I think he should. The second destination, I think it's Golden State. Now, before you guys say, oh, you Warriors homer, hear me out. The Warriors are in cap hell. Well, they're about to not be. Klay Thompson is going to leave the Golden State Warriors this summer. I'm convinced of it. Okay, I'll talk a little bit about the Warriors later, but a recent report by Zach Lowe tells me Klay is not going to be a Warrior next season. So that contract is off the books. Whether Chris Paul stays or not, he's probably going to be on the vet minimum. Chris Paul's about LeBron's age. He came in the draft after, or a couple drafts after, rather. Chris Paul's not going to make near what he made this year, which was about $30 million. That's off the books. Now, the Wiggins contract is going to be tough to move. We'll see if the Warriors are able to do that, but Chris Paul's contract off the books. Klay Thompson's contract off the books. Yes, you're paying Steph. Yes, you're paying Draymond, but Draymond, underrated story. I thought Draymond was going to sign like a 3-year, $100 million contract. He actually signed a 4-year, $100 million contract, which means you get to spread the money out longer. You're telling me that Draymond Green, who's about as close as anybody to LeBron James, to the point where it actually annoys some Warriors fans, not me, but some Warriors fans like, hey, Draymond, quit being buddies with LeBron. You battled for a decade. Draymond wouldn't take a little pay cut for his buddy LeBron. Steph won't take a pay cut, nor should he, by the way. But Steph, who said at the press conference after the Tuesday night loss to Sacramento to end the season and potentially the dynasty, said, nah, I just want to win. LeBron has been saying for years, man, I'd love to play with Steph Curry. Oh, boy. You imagine us together? Man, win some championships with that guy. Steph, we know, is pretty warm to LeBron. Steve Kerr, I think Steve Kerr would take LeBron James and welcome him with open arms. The cap situation in Golden State is far tougher than it is in Philadelphia. Philadelphia's got the cap space. Golden State, meh. But you're telling me a 1-year deal with LeBron to team up with Steph, Draymond, we'll see whatever else the Warriors are able to add. I'm not sure they'll have much else, but they won't have to give up any assets to get the king. 1-year deal, if it makes sense, and it puts Golden State back in championship contention. And the last is a team that also may lose tonight and may go out in round one, given their opponent. The third most likely destination to me for LeBron is the Miami Heat. He has history there. He already played there. Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra gets to team up with Jimmy, who's great in the playoffs. Bam, who's an elite defensive player. All these shooters. If there's anything Miami Heat know how to do, it's to take unknowns, mostly shooters, and turn them into really important pieces. LeBron loves three-point shooters. Team up with Jimmy, team up with Bam. Now, their cap situation's tougher than anybody because they're paying Jimmy, they're paying Bam, they're paying Tyler Hero. So it's going to be a little tough. But if there's anybody that knows how to make it work, it's the evil genius himself, Pat Riley. So, should the Lakers go out in round one? This, to me, feels like, these, rather, are, to me, what feels like the three most likely destinations. Number one, the Sixers. Number two, the Warriors. And number three, the Heat. But all that being said, if the Lakers lose to Denver and they're underdogs, I think LeBron should leave and frankly will leave. You tell me he's going to look around the Lakers and say, chaotic front office, not very good ownership, and that's being nice. Anthony Davis is great, but getting older. And the other pieces around me, Austin Reeves is good, but has he hit a ceiling? D'Angelo Russell is a streaky shooter, and that's about it. He's awful on defense. Philadelphia, Golden State, Miami, a lot more attractive destinations. And they would not have to give up anything. All right, moving to the comments. John Rivera, wow, 6 years already. Sheesh, yeah, I know. It's pretty hard to believe. I can remember that summer of 2018, rather, when LeBron signed with the Lakers, because that was coming off of his 8 straight finals with Cleveland. They got swept by my Warriors. And, you know, he signed with the – is my mic in? I want to make sure it's all good to go. Okay. Yeah, my mic's good. For some reason, it looked unplugged here on the side. But yeah, no, I remember, and the writing was on the wall. You know, he had the meeting with Magic, and it just kind of felt like, okay, LeBron's not staying Cleveland with J.R. Smith and an old Kevin Love. He's going to go to the Lakers. They got young pieces. They got assets. They got cap space. And it was a rocky first season in LA. And I remember with LeBron, and I see it, there's very similar parallels to me in this past year for Steph Curry and LeBron's first year in LA, where a lot of young guys in Golden State, you know, Steph was 36. I think LeBron was 30. Well, LeBron was like 34, but he was in year 16, Steph, year 16. We're about to go into year 16. And, you know, given what they'd shown the past, it's like, boy, I'll tell you, LeBron's tailing off. Steph, oh, I don't know. Is he the same guy? LeBron averaged like 28-8-8 that season. But he got injured, came back, wasn't the same. Lakers missed the playoffs, and it's like, okay, LeBron's still awesome, but he can't carry you to a title. You're going to have to get him a guy like Anthony Davis. They did. They won the championship the next year. So I'm just saying, you get one piece in Golden State. Steph, LeBron, I've been recruiting LeBron of the Warriors for like 2 years on this little podcast of mine. I'll do what I can because I'll say this. We won't get Steph or, you know, prime Steph or prime LeBron, obviously, because they both, Steph's at the very end of his prime. I think LeBron has exited his prime about 2 years ago. But, man, those two in their heyday together, my, oh, my. You talk about a fit? Talk about dominating, winning championships? That'd have been scary. I think it could be scary even today. Oh, that's interesting. Says, apparently Russell Wilson took batting practice with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Okay, take that for what it's worth. Listen, I'm a huge Steelers fan. I'm a Red Sox fan, so I don't really care about the Pirates. But listen, I'm skeptical about the Russ move. Like I said, the Steelers made the right move in getting Russ because, A, he's better than Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky. And he's on a one-year, $1 million deal. Okay, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Okay. Now, I want to emphasize this, right? If Russell doesn't work, hey, high upside guy in Justin Fields, but even better. I said this a couple weeks ago, sort of sidebar, then we'll go to Joel Embiid. I think that the Steelers may have a plan in mind to make Justin Fields their version of Trey Lance. Because I think Trey Lance is in Dallas with the Cowboys to be a trade piece. Because Trey Lance has put almost nothing on tape in San Francisco. What little was on tape was mostly average to bad. But third pick in the draft, a lot of upside, still very young, very raw. Somebody will take a chance on him. And that's one of the few good moves that I think Jerry Jones made. I think the Steelers may do that with Justin Fields. Fields, who's shown far better production in more time, certainly, but far better production than Trey Lance has. And here's the kicker. The Steelers, obviously Russell's there. Justin Fields is there, but I think it's a trade piece. And the reason I say that, draft Michael Penix Jr. I'm just saying it's an idea. We can show, do we have it right here? The draft order for 2024, we could put this up here. Yeah, Steelers, 20th pick in the draft. I'm just saying it's not crazy. I mean, Michael Penix Jr. wasn't even invited to the first round of a draft. Neither was Bo Nix, but I'm not high on Bo Nix at all. I think the size isn't there. I feel like he started 60-plus college football games. I feel like we've gotten the closest thing to what Bo Nix's ceiling is going to be. Nice player, productive. I could see, like, Denver taking a chance on him, somebody like that. You know, maybe somebody trades up into the first round to take him as, you know, maybe their next franchise quarterback. But I'm telling you, I think these scouts, and listen, I trust scouts greatly when it comes to the draft process. I think they're underestimating Michael Penix Jr. I've said for months, I think he's the second best guy to Caleb Williams. And I think Jaden Daniels is going to be really good. Jaden Daniels, sources have been saying for weeks, and I trust them, Jaden Daniels going number two to the Commanders. So I think number one pick is a non-story because Caleb's going to Chicago. Number two pick is a non-story because Jaden Daniels going to the Commanders. The draft really starts with New England at number three. And I talked about the Patriots. Again, this I've just gone off a tangent now. I'll get back to Joel Embiid, but if the Patriots do decide to take J.J. McCarthy, I think it will be one of the biggest mistakes they've ever made in their franchise. Because you just went from a low upside, high floor, low ceiling quarterback in Mac Jones. And by the way, I'm not even sure Mac's floor was that high. I said that, you know, 3 years ago. I liked McCarthy more than I liked Mac back then. He's more mobile than Mac. Seems to be a better teammate than Mac, better leader. But yeah, arm strength isn't great. He doesn't show you a whole lot of special. Accuracy's good, but that's because he's throwing a bunch of intermediate routes. I mean, again, if I were New England, I think there's three options. Take the best quarterback on the board if you believe that's the best quarterback, and I'm sorry, it's not J.J. McCarthy. take Marvin Harrison Jr. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is a transformative receiver talent, or trade back. I think all of those, assuming the quarterback pick is not McCarthy, works. Again, if I were New England, I'd take Penix, but I don't think they will. I don't think a lot of teams are going to take Penix, which is why I'm crossing my fingers he falls to the 20th pick and that my Steelers make the smart decision and take the kid because I think he's going to be awesome. All right, back to the NBA. This is this is basically an NBA show, but I had to throw in some draft stuff. So, Joel Embiid, he is undeniably one of the 10 best players in the NBA. Many argue top five. I'm not willing to go there yet because of, well, really what this segment is, lack of postseason success. But I can't argue Joel Embiid, two-time scoring champion. This year, he wouldn't have qualified for the scoring championship, but he dropped 70. It was against the Spurs, but still he dropped 70 this season. Multiple big scoring outputs the last 3 years, but two-time scoring champion, one-time league MVP, multiple top five MVP finishes, and has the Sixers in the seventh seed. Obviously he missed a lot of time in January. The Sixers really struggled. He came back, they won 8 straight, and they got by the Miami Heat on Wednesday by the skin of their teeth in the play-in tournament game. I thought Miami was going to win. I think Miami would have won had Jimmy Butler not went down. Well, Butler stayed in the game, but he was nowhere near 100%. I think the Heat would have won that game. And nonetheless, Philly's in the playoffs. They're the seventh seed, and many are picking them to beat the New York Knicks in the first round. I'll predict that series later in the show. But regardless of how this postseason goes for the Sixers, whether it lasts a round, whether it goes to the NBA Finals in 2 months, Joel Embiid has never had more pressure in his career than he has right now with Philadelphia, and I'll explain why. So I already talked about Embiid's accomplishments. The MVP, the scoring titles, the argument has been going on for years. I used to be on Embiid's side. Now I've transitioned completely to Jokic's side on who's the best big in basketball. Or not best big, because if it's best big, then Giannis has to be on there. But best center in basketball, is it Nikola Jokic? Is it Joel Embiid? I think the vast majority of people, myself included, have said, yeah, Jokic finally, after years of, let's be really Nuggets fans, futility in the playoffs, aside from 2020, he was able to put a fantastic run together a year ago, and the Nuggets won the championship, and they're favored by many to do so again. But we could show you Joel Embiid's regular season numbers are fantastic. Since 2007, we're not counting his rookie year because he missed a lot of time. Since 2017-2018, which is the first year he went to the playoffs, Embiid, 28-11-4 assists, 50% from the field, 34% from three, which is pretty good for a center, and almost 83% from the free throw line, and a defensive rating of 105. So Joel Embiid is an excellent, excellent, excellent regular season player since 2017-18. 28-11 on 50% from the field. You'll take that any day of the week. Saturday, or Sunday through Saturday. Joel Embiid, the playoffs, though, different guy, if we can put up his postseason numbers. Or not his postseason numbers, rather, his elimination game numbers right here. Or no, sorry, yeah, we got it. Postseason stats, my bad. Postseason stats for Joel Embiid. Points per game comes down 4, rebounds per game goes down 1, assists per game goes down 1, field goal percentage goes from 50 in the regular season to 46 in the playoffs, three-point percentage from 34 to 28, free throw percentage goes down slightly but mostly stays the same. Defensive rating goes up, which the higher your defensive rating is, the worse. It's kind of like golf. Like the higher you shoot, the worse. 105.9 defensive rating, up from 105.1 defensive rating in the regular season. So any way you slice it, Joel Embiid is not a good playoff performer relative to what he is in the regular season, but it gets worse. So Embiid is one of one in many ways. One of those ways, and I seem to be the only person in the world that points this out, and I'm labeled by Philadelphia an Embiid hater. No, I'm just an Embiid truth teller. He's awesome, but this is a true fact. Joel Embiid, only MVP in NBA history to have never made a conference finals. Not an NBA finals. We've had guys win MVPs, not make the finals. Nash didn't make a finals. Jokic hadn't made a finals until last year, and there's somebody else I'm missing that did not make the NBA finals. Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose didn't make the NBA finals. Joel Embiid's not only not made a finals, he's never made a conference finals. Only MVP in history to not do that. Now, why has he not made a conference finals? Well, because in elimination games, the guy is bad. By his standards, at least. We could show you his numbers in elimination games. 22 points on 38% shooting for a center. 38% is awful for a center, much less the MVP of the league, Joel Embiid. Shoots 25% from three. Yes, gets you 11 boards, but only two assists. Free throw percentage goes down significantly from about 83% in the regular season to 77.5% in elimination games. Defensive rating goes up by an entire point, which is a lot by defensive metrics. He has a 3-5 record in elimination games. He's 0-3 in game sevens. Game 7 against Toronto, 2019, Kawhi hits the shot. Embiid was okay in that game, not great. Game 7 against Atlanta, no show. Lost to a Hawks team where Trae Young shot, I forget, it was like 5-27 or something for the field. Kevin Huerter was the best player on the floor that night, not Joel Embiid. We blame Ben Simmons, we blame Doc Rivers, Embiid's got to share that as well. It's a Game 7 home loss to the Hawks in the second round 3 years ago. And last year, remember, had a 3-2 lead on Boston. James Harden, we know, playoff James Harden, he's awful in the postseason. Well, Harden essentially won you two games in that series. And I'm not a Harden defender by any stretch. I've been as critical of Harden as anybody. But Harden went crazy in game one. The Sixers stole game one in Boston. And he went crazy in game four and hit the game-winning shot, actually, to beat the Celtics to tie the series up 2-2. Philadelphia goes up 3-2 at home. Embiid disappears. Series goes to Boston. Game 7, Embiid is a no-show. I don't even think in that game he had double-digit rebounds. I don't think he broke 20 points scoring. When the moment calls for, Embiid disappears. Well, Bryson, that's because he's hurt. Okay, well, here's the problem. That has to become part of your identity, doesn't it? I mean, we hold that against Kawhi Leonard. But again, to a certain, when it comes to injured athletes, there's a fine line to... Like, you don't, like, make fun of them for getting hurt. Like, I remember AD was called Street Clothes by Charles Barkley. That was a little mean. I called AD Always Down at one point. Probably wasn't my best moment on the show. But there's a fine line between being objective about the fact that, hey, this guy's injured a lot and, you know, kind of making humor out of it. There's not humor in anybody getting injured. Some point in the middle. That's who Joel Embiid is. We can show you, again, all graphics provided by Alfred Parso Jr., 2018, orbital fracture and concussion for Embiid. 2019, knee tendonitis and flu-like symptoms. 2021, torn meniscus. 2022, torn thumb, orbital fracture, and concussion. Last year, knee sprain. This year, lateral meniscus injury. So at some point, that has to be reality for Joel Embiid. Whether he goes on and, well, we won't be saying this if he wins the championship, but if the Sixers go out early in the playoffs and Embiid doesn't play that well, you will have to say, hey, Embiid's not a playoff performer. And to those that push back and say, yeah, it's because he's hurt, then can we all come to a consensus on this? To the Embiid defenders who say, well, you can't judge him off of the injuries. Can we come to a consensus on this? Then he's not reliable. And you can't build your franchise around a guy like that. And I was an Embiid fan. I thought Embiid should have won MVP last year. He did. I would have put him second on my list above Jokic in 2021. To me, Steph Curry should have won that award. Neither here nor there. A case could have been made for him to win MVP in 2022, although I would have given that to Giannis. I've been an Embiid fan over the years, but as time has gone on, as we've seen what he's done in the playoffs, particularly in elimination games of the second round, it does become very difficult to defend. And it becomes your reality as a superstar. Doesn't take away from what Embiid's done the regular season. He'll be an MVP for the rest of his life, for the rest of NBA history. But no conference finals? I mean, the Hawks, in that stretch, the Hawks have made a conference finals. The Heat have made multiple, with far less talent, conference finals. For crying out loud, the Raptors won a championship in that stretch and went through you to do so. And people forget, that Sixers team to me was the second best roster in basketball to Golden State, because Golden State still had Kevin Durant at his peak. The Sixers in 2019 have the second best roster in basketball. You got Joel Embiid. You got Ben Simmons prior to him being terrified to shoot. You had Jimmy Butler. You had J.J. Redick. That was a good Sixers roster and pushed the eventual champion Raptors to the brink. Embiid disappeared in Game 7, just like he did against the Hawks 2 years later. Just like he did against the Celtics in Game 6 and 7 2 years after that. At some point, when you put together a track record, whether it be bad playoff performances, just because you're not, you know, you don't have necessarily the clutch gene or whatever the case may be to show up in those moments, or because you're injured, your reality is you're an unreliable player. For the record, since 2019, that's what Kawhi Leonard is. Kawhi hasn't played in the conference finals. Kawhi has gotten injured. Kawhi missed an entire season one time. The Clippers missed the playoffs that year. He got hurt last year in the playoffs. He got hurt in 2021 in the playoffs. Kawhi was beat up in 2020 during the bubble when he got freaking 4 months off prior to that. Kawhi's an unreliable player since 2019. Or really since 2020. 2019, he did win the championship. Embiid's been an unreliable playoff player his whole career. So there's a lot of pressure on Joel to be able to show up and perform. Listen, if the Sixers go out in round one to the Knicks and Embiid goes crazy, okay. Yeah, okay. I can live with that. But also to a certain degree, it's, well, if he hadn't gotten hurt again, are we in this spot? Which is why I say, I do think LeBron to Philadelphia, it makes sense. You're not relying on Embiid as much, at least for a year. I think LeBron's only going to play one more year beyond this year. Makes sense. Just throwing that out there. A lot of pressure on Embiid. And we'll see if he's able to live up to it. Because listen, can't say the roster isn't good enough. I mean, Maxey averaged 25 a game this year. Tobias Harris is your number three. Tobias Harris is a good player. Kelly Oubre is giving good minutes. Embiid has by far the best coach he's ever had in his career. Brett Brown wasn't that good. Doc Rivers, we know his playoff history. Nick Nurse, a championship winning head coach. Nick Nurse is a very good coach. Roster is good. Knicks, listen, I'll predict who wins the series later. I think the Sixers have a better roster than the Knicks. They certainly have the best. I love Brunson, but the Sixers objectively have the best player in the series. What you got, Joel? If you can't show up again, we will have to come to the consensus. The Embiid fans, Embiid haters, the Embiid neutrals, all alike. He's an unreliable player who you can't build a championship team, much less a conference finals team, around. And that'll be his reality. But listen, these Philadelphia fans, and let's just say I haven't exactly made friends in Philadelphia over the years with my takes regarding the Eagles, Sixers. I've been pro Phillies for a long time, and I don't watch the Flyers because I don't watch hockey. But let's just say the folks in Philadelphia don't like me that much. But listen, it is what it is. If you don't like me because I keep it real about your favorite player, that's fine. It is what it is. Transitioning now to my Warriors for a second. Because there's been some things happen in the last few days. I talked about them on Wednesday. I essentially eulogized the dynasty as currently constructed, and that is kind of the basis of this segment. But I eulogized the Steph, Clay, Draymond Warriors dynasty in my opening segment and on Bryson's Best 10 on Wednesday's show on Bryson's Best 10. But there's been some things happen the last few days. Klay Thompson's had a press conference. Steve Kerr's had a press conference. The general manager of a team, Mike Dunleavy Jr.'s had a press conference. Draymond Green's done a podcast. Lots happened. Not on the court, but off of it for Golden State just in the last 48 hours. So Steve Kerr, Mike Dunleavy Jr. both had press conferences, and they echoed a very similar message. Given, especially with the new CBA, the new salary cap rules, we cannot shell out this much money and not make the playoffs. Like if we're going to deal with this tax that the NBA is imposing on us because of the luxury tax or because of a salary cap, we better make some deep playoff runs. We cannot be going out losing in the first play-in tournament game as the 10 seed to beat up Sacramento. They didn't say it as forcefully as I did, but that's the message that they were sending. And they're 100% right. You can't be paying Steph and Draymond and Clay and CP3 and Wiggins and all this money just to go out and before the playoffs even start. You had Klay Thompson, who was, and listen, I get it, a little feisty, and I understand it with the media, because the first question he was asked was something along the lines of, hey, Klay, what's your future? Are you hoping to stay? And Klay Thompson kind of shot back. He said, we're just going to go ahead and start talking about the future, not talking about the present. I get it for Klay, and I think for Klay, that was his, Klay all season has kind of been going through a coping period of sorts where he knows his best days are behind him as a player from an ability standpoint. He knows that deep down, he may not admit it, and I get it. He's a competitive, prideful athlete. What athlete isn't? Worth their salt, at least. He knows if I'm the focal point of this team, we're probably not going to win anything. Not the way we used to. So Klay has been kind of salty, a little, or salty is probably the wrong word, a little testy at these press conferences. Man, I freaking get it. When you've reached the highs that Klay's reached, and then by the way, your last game as a Warrior, you go 0-for-10. Man, that sucks. That just sucks. So I have nothing but empathy for Klay Thompson. I hate that that's probably how he went out as a Golden State Warrior, given the blood, sweat, and tears that he put into this franchise, helping us win four championships. Draymond Green, on a podcast, the Draymond Green Show, was talking about the season, and I haven't listened to that particular podcast yet, but I saw a clip where he was talking about how after the game, he said, he told Steph in the locker room, "Hey, I love you, bro." And Steph Curry said, "I love you too. We ain't done yet." That's according to Draymond, and I have no reason to believe he's lying. He's not going to quote his best friend on the team, Steph Curry. There's also finally been a report from I think it was Zach Lowe, that said that patience has worn thin with Draymond Green within the organization. I, as the biggest Draymond Green fan and defender in the world, I get that too. Because a case can be made, a very strong case can be made that the Golden State Warriors are not, do we have the Draymond Green graphic? I think we do, that the Golden State Warriors are not in the position that they're in if Draymond Green doesn't put himself in this position to get suspended not once, but twice. And in those games, we can show you the graphic right now, in those games that he played, that if Draymond played a full game, didn't get thrown out, the Warriors were 32-19. In the games that he got thrown out, they were 1-3. In the games that he didn't play, they were 13-14, a game under 500. So when Draymond plays, last season, again, Warriors were the 10 seed, just a few games out of missing, you know, being able to miss out on the play-in entirely, not have to worry about it, be playing basketball this weekend. 13 games above 500 when Draymond plays, 2 games under 500 when he gets thrown out, a game under 500 when he doesn't play. So that to me has been a very tough balancing act for the Warriors that I've talked about all season, where people are like, "Hey, you got to get rid of Draymond." I'm like, listen, he's still valuable. But the frustrating part is that's why I'm getting pissed off with your increasing volatility. Like the Gobert thing I defended because he was protecting a teammate, Klay Thompson. The Nurkic thing was inexcusable. He punched a guy unprovoked. Then he had, and he wasn't suspended for this, but getting thrown out of a pivotal game against the Orlando Magic a few weeks ago, 4 minutes in, to the point where Steph Curry is literally in tears on the court. That was the frustrating part for Draymond. It's like, God, we need you, dude. And you keep putting yourself in this position in a selfish move to get yourself thrown out of these basketball games and suspended for the first two incidents against the Timberwolves and Suns. First things first for the Golden State Warriors, they have to ask themselves a serious question, a hard question. What do they want to be for the next year, 2 years, however much longer Steph Curry is a great player? Which I think he's still got another, as a great player, 2 to 3 years left in him. I really do. Just because of skill set, his talent, and in what was a down year for Steph, he averaged 26 a game and led the league by a mile in three-pointers made. He's pretty good still. The Warriors have to ask, what do we want to be? Do we want to be the franchise that was the dynasty for a decade, terrorized the league in that span, won four championships, won back-to-back at one point, got old, got injured, and this is the hard part, and stayed loyal. Staying loyal to Steph's easy. Steph's made a lot of people a lot of money in that franchise. He turned the Warriors, when Steph Curry was on the Golden State Warriors, when he was drafted in 2009, they were worth $320 million. Today, they're the second most valuable sports franchise on planet Earth to the Dallas Cowboys. That's the Steph Curry effect. It's easy to be loyal to Steph. It's hard to be loyal to Draymond because of the volatility, but easy to be loyal to Draymond because from an on-court production standpoint, Draymond Green's still a very effective player. The numbers, as I just showed you, bear that out. It's pretty easy to be loyal to Steve Kerr. I mean, he won four championships, and contrary to what some Gen Z idiot Warrior fans think, Steve Kerr is a very good coach. You know, Grant Hill, I think he knows about basketball. He appointed Steve Kerr, of all the coaches, he appointed Steve Kerr to be the head coach of Team USA. My guess is Steve Kerr probably knows a little bit more about basketball than you do on Twitter. Are we loyal to Klay? That's the question. Now, should the Warriors attempt to bring Klay Thompson back? Absolutely. But the number has to be right. Here's the problem. A report came out today by Zach Lowe, who I trust intently, that Klay Thompson, this is from Zach Lowe, this is his quote, Clay is going to draw interest around the league. He's going to want a fair salary. I can tell you for sure, both sides took note of that Drew Holiday extension with the Celtics, 4 years, $135 million. That's Zach Lowe's quote. If Clay is looking at the Drew Holiday deal as sort of the goal, the Golden State Warriors would guarantee they will never win another championship with Steph Curry ever again if they give him that deal. And I love Klay Thompson. Love the guy. You cannot give him $135 million. And I hate to do this, and I hope, this matter of fact, this is the last time I ever do this. Klay Thompson from 2015 to 2022, when they won four championships, these are his numbers in elimination games. We showed you Embiid's elimination game numbers, which aren't good. Klay's are excellent. Averages 26 a game on 46 from the field, 50% from three, 5.5 three-pointers made per game, and a defensive rating of 107. Since then, Klay Thompson elimination games, he goes from 26 points per game to 8 points per game. He goes from shooting 47% from the field to shooting 16%. He goes from shooting literally 50%. So one of every two Klay Thompson three-pointers were going in the basket. He went from 50% from three to 17% from three in elimination games. He went from 5 three-point makes a game to 1.5 three-point makes per game. His defensive rating was 107. It's now gone up to 118. He's nowhere near the same player. An effective player, yes. Is a spot-up shooter, Klay Thompson can be effective for you. But if Klay Thompson, and I don't anticipate he does, and I get it, but if Klay Thompson does not want to come off the bench and be like the seventh or eighth guy, just really a spot-up guy, play like 20 minutes max a night, the Warriors can't bring him back. He's not, I love Klay. You cannot give him $135 million. So, if you decide, hey, we're not going to be loyal for the sake of being loyal. We're going to be loyal to the things that cannot have made us great, because Klay has made the Warriors great, but can make us great in the future. Steph can. Draymond can. Steve Kerr can. Okay, great. Now what do we do? Klay Thompson's contract is off the books. They're not going to pay him $135 million. Chris Paul's contract is off the books. It's why still people say, oh, you traded Jordan Poole for Chris Paul. What a dumb trade. Meanwhile, you know, ignoring Jordan Poole's numbers in Washington and being an irrelevant basketball player. That was still a great deal. Jordan Poole is in the midst of a contract that pays him $120 million. He's got 2 years left in that deal. Chris Paul, free agent. Contract's off the books. So if nothing else, the Warriors traded for a guy on an expiring contract that's off the books now. Kuminga is getting better. Kuminga was a twitchy, athletic teenager when he came to the league and didn't get a ton of minutes. Year two, because of Draymond's injuries and Klay missed time, Steph missed time, Kuminga got an increased role, but still just not ready yet. This year, averaged 16 a game, shooting percentage is good, has developed a little bit of a three-point shot. Like, there's a reason Jonathan Kuminga was taken with the sixth or seventh pick of the draft. The kid has, I think the kid's going to be a multi-time All-Star in the future. I think he's going to be awesome. He's not awesome yet. Can he have that breakthrough year four? Maybe. Are the Warriors willing to gamble on that? That, to me, is going to be the question. Can you move Wiggins? To me, that's a separate conversation. That's going to be tough given his contract. But it's like what I talked about earlier with the Warriors, to me, being the second most likely destination for LeBron because of his relationship with Draymond, because he is adamant. We've heard it out of his own mouth. He wants to play with Steph Curry someday. Steve Kerr's a way better coach than Darvin Ham. That's putting it mildly. But are the Warriors willing to part with really young, talented players? Brandon Podziemski, Trayce Jackson-Davis, Moses Moody, most difficult, Jonathan Kuminga. Could they parlay those into, dare I say, getting Giannis? Because I've said, and I maintain it today, Giannis Antetokounmpo, if he plays at all this series against the Pacers, he will play his final game as a Milwaukee Buck this month, or if the series goes in the month of May, within the next few weeks. Let's put it this way. This series is going to be the last time Giannis Antetokounmpo ever suits up as a Milwaukee Buck. I firmly believe that. I think the Knicks are an attractive destination for him. I think Golden State's an attractive destination for them because of Steph and because of Draymond. The Warriors have to ask themselves a question. And for the record, good news is, well, I would say good news, but you know, it's an interesting situation that they're in. They have a lot of time to make these decisions. They have the rest of April, May, And then about mid to late June, they got to start getting working. What do we want to be next year and for the next 2 to 3 years? Basically, what are we going to be for as long as Steph Curry is still a great player? Are we going to be loyal for the sake of being loyal because of what these guys have done for the franchise? Or are we going to be loyal to Steph? And being loyal to Steph means winning. Because as Steph said, this is like the simplest quote in the world, I just want to win. While it's currently constructed, that ain't going to happen. So the Warriors have to make those tough decisions. Let's see. This is from Adam Schefter. It says he has some news. Okay, this is just a Sports Center report. Never mind. Saw something from Adam Schefter. He was talking about J.J. McCarthy and Jaden Daniels, who could be, well, in reverse, Daniels and McCarthy could be the second and third picks of the draft. Again, I don't dislike Jaden Daniels, or I'm sorry, J.J. McCarthy seems like a nice kid. You can't, especially as limited as the Patriots are offensively, you cannot take this kid with the third overall pick. You're setting him up for failure. And I feel bad for him. But that would not be a good decision at all. Okay, so if I can clear these graphics super fast, because we do a segment every year around NBA playoff time. And we do NBA strengths, or not strengths, we do NBA weaknesses coming into the postseason. Talk about, hey, what's the one thing that'll hold this team back from winning the NBA championship? There's got to be one thing that holds them back. And as we get these graphics set and ready to go, that's always going to be the question, is what are, even for the Boston Celtics, even for the Denver Nuggets, there's no such thing, in a salary cap sport, there's no such thing as a perfect roster or a perfect team. It doesn't exist. What does exist are weaknesses, be them subtle, or be they massive, whatever the case may be. So as we get these, again, I'm going to work as fast as I can here because, again, this streaming service I use, StreamYard, can be a little limiting in terms of how many graphics it'll let you put up here, getting them set to go. Okay, so NBA playoff weaknesses. What's the thing that's going to hold these teams back from winning the NBA championship? So go and get the background music ready to go. NBA, we will start with the, it looks like we're dealing with some Wi-Fi connection. Okay, we're good. All right, get the background music going on right now. We'll start with the Western Conference. We will start out west with the play-in team. So one of these teams will not even make the playoffs. One of these two won't, but we'll talk about them because one of these two will get in. Starting with the Sacramento Kings, what's their biggest weakness? Sabonis struggles badly in the playoffs. If you look at Sabonis, he's about a double-double guy, almost a triple-double guy this season. Average 8 or 9 assists. In the postseason, his efficiency plummets. He goes from being about a 20-ish, 18 to 20 point per game guy to like a 12, 13 point per game guy. Efficiency plummets. And again, he's a bit of a limited player in the sense that he's got a decent mid-range jumper. He has a very inconsistent three-point shot. Handle isn't great. And Draymond Green, we saw a year ago in the playoffs, absolutely shut him down. Now, if they get in the postseason, they'll face Oklahoma City. Chet Holmgren, you know, so the bigs they got, you know, down Oklahoma City, we'll see if he's able to succeed against them. But just in general, I don't think his game is one that's translatable to the playoffs. The Kings have other weaknesses, but to me, obviously the Malik Monk and Kevin Huerter injuries hurt them, but the Sabonis playoff struggles to me will do them in if the Kings even get in the playoffs. So that's Sacramento's biggest weakness. To the New Orleans Pelicans, what's their biggest weakness? Do they enjoy New Orleans home cooking? That's their biggest weakness, and that may sound weird, but here's what I mean. The New Orleans Pelicans are actually a way better road team than a home team. They won 28 games away from Smoothie King Center, 21 at home. So the Kings, or not the Kings, the New Orleans Pelicans, only 3 games over .500 at home. Now that doesn't bode well for them tonight because we saw they lost the playing game to the Lakers. We'll see what they do tonight against the Sacramento Kings. But if you look at New Orleans, Zion's down, I get that. But Zion gets hurt a lot. We know this. I think Willie Green's a good coach. Brandon Ingram doesn't have his rhythm at all coming off of the injury. CJ McCollum, I don't know what it is. The fans in New Orleans seem to like their basketball team, not as much as they do their football team, the Saints, but they seem to at least like the Pelicans. I don't know what it is. Maybe they like it too much. Maybe they like cooking too much in New Orleans, and that's why they're not ready to go for some of these games. But do the Pelicans enjoy home cooking in New Orleans? They may be the only human beings in the world in that city, that don't. We'll see how they perform in the playoffs if they get in. That's their biggest weakness. To the Los Angeles Lakers, their biggest weakness, every series they play, they'll have the inferior head coach. It's that simple. So There's a lot of Darvin Ham defenders that, frankly, I don't really get. So since the Lakers made their lineup change in January, they've been an excellent basketball team. One of the best. I think they have a top five record in the NBA in that span. Here's the question. Why'd it take them that long to make that change? If they make that change, who knows? Maybe they are sitting as the five seed and get to avoid Denver until the Western Conference Finals. Instead, they got to play in round one. In the first round series against the Denver Nuggets, they'll have the inferior coach, Darvin Ham, to Michael Malone. Round two, they would play either the Phoenix Suns or the Minnesota Timberwolves. Not a huge fan of Chris Finch, but I think he's a better coach than Darvin Ham. He's shown that at least this season. If you look at the Phoenix Suns, the Frank Vogel, well, let's see. He won a championship with these same top two guys, LeBron and AD. So that has to be factored in as well. I don't think he's a good coach when it comes to making adjustments. I don't think he's a good coach in terms of understanding what the matchup is and how the Lakers can exploit that, because they have the pieces. You have LeBron and Anthony Davis. You can explain any matchup you want, and the shooters that the Lakers have in every series the Lakers play, whether it's this one or three more, they will have the inferior coach, and that will do them in. To the Phoenix Suns, their biggest weakness, sure used Chris Paul. That may sound crazy, but, you know, last finals the Phoenix Suns made, Chris Paul was a part of that team and arguably the best player on that team, even over Devin Booker. You know, Kevin Durant's great. So is Devin Booker. Bradley Beal's still a very good player, although he's declining in large part due to injury. When I say Chris Paul, what I mean by that is a point guard. And I said back in June or July, whenever this trade was made, it was a horrible move by the Phoenix Suns. You got two all-time great scorers, or certainly in this generation, Kevin Durant's definitely an all-time great scorer. We'll see about Booker. Katie and Booker, they need a guy to get the ball consistently. Instead, they get basically a lesser version of Booker, who's a lesser version of KD. You get an unreliable big man in Yusuf Nurkic. You downgrade a head coach. I like Vogel. He's not as good of a coach as Monty Williams. Monty Williams did coach him to the finals 3 years ago. The offseason moves and some of the trades that the Suns have made in the last 12 months to me make absolutely zero sense. I defended them trading for KD because guess what? That's KD. You do it. You move heaven and earth to get that guy. But moving Chris Paul for Bradley Beal doesn't even fit with what you're trying to do. Makes no sense to me. That's the Suns' biggest weakness. With the Dallas Mavericks, their biggest weakness, both stars are exposable on defense. Luka Doncic has had, some argue, an MVP-level season. I'm of the mindset I'd vote him number two on my MVP ballot to Jokic. He's averaged, what, 34-9-8, 34-9-9. Luka Doncic has had an awesome regular season. He's been better on defense, but Luka Doncic is not exactly going to get the glove nickname the way that Gary Payton did back in the day. Kyrie Irving used to be a decent defender back in the day, not as much now that he's gotten older. Kyrie, to his credit, no drama, no stuff this year, and has been very productive on the court, which he's always been over the course of his career. But he's kind of a turnstile on defense at this stage of his career. So if Dallas, they're going to play the Clippers, who don't have a lot of great guard play. Westbrook and Harden are declining players. But if they get into a series with the Nuggets with Jamal Murray, if they get into a series with the Phoenix Suns even, with the Kevin Durant, with the Devin Booker, the Suns can't expose that mismatch because you could go right at those two guys in the pick and roll and have a lot of success. I think Dallas, to me, is the second best team in the Western Conference, slightly over Oklahoma City to Denver. I love the roster they put together. Jason Kidd, I think, is an excellent head coach, and Luka is a great, historically great playoff performer, but that will do with the Dallas Mavericks, and if they don't win the championship, is their two guards can't guard anybody. To the Los Angeles Clippers, it's very simple. Kawhi's hurt. Again, this is yet another year on the Kawhi Leonard Los Angeles Clippers experiment that he is injured. We'll see if he plays this opening series against the Dallas Mavericks, but we can go back even to his San Antonio days. 2018, didn't play the entire series. Only played 9 games that whole year with some weird knee issue that the San Antonio Spurs doctors cleared him to play, but he didn't play. It was an odd situation. 2019, won the championship, won finals MVP with the Raptors, but was beat up all playoffs long, had knee tendonitis. 2020, similar knee stuff. Injured, whole playoff run. 2021, looked fine until he tore his ACL in the second round against the Utah Jazz. Missed the rest of that series and the rest of the playoffs and the next season. So the Clippers didn't make the playoffs in 22 because they didn't have Kawhi. Last year, Kawhi's playing awesome. Kawhi, by the way, in the playoffs, great playoff performer when he's on the court. And last year, looks great. Clippers win game one, lose game two, but Kawhi still looks good. Doesn't play the rest of the series due to another knee issue. This year, his knee has swelled over the past week. So again, I don't believe in the Clippers anyway. I think Ty Lue's a great coach. Paul George is a good more number three piece than a number two piece. But Harden in the playoffs, we know his issues. Westbrook, we know, is a very inefficient performer, regular season or playoffs. But any chance this team has to go deep in the playoffs looks like it's gotten they've gotten taken out by their legs again, essentially, because Kawhi's down. And his leg is down once again. So Kawhi's hurt again. That's the biggest weakness for the Clippers. So the Minnesota Timberwolves, their biggest weakness, playoff Rudy and playoff Finch. It's quite simple. Rudy Gobert, who is potentially about to get his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award, which I think is a disrespect to the award itself. You're telling me that Rudy Gobert is just as good, if not better, than Hakeem Olajuwon and Ben Wallace, Dennis Rodman, Kevin Garnett. Miss me with that and then some. Oh, cool, he blocks shots. Well, he's not even as good as that as Wemby. So let's keep that in perspective. He's not the best all-around defensive player in the NBA. That guy happens to be Anthony Davis. So that's beside the point. Rudy in the playoffs gets exposed. Why, you ask, does he get exposed? Well, can't guard the perimeter. And what teams are going to do, what the Phoenix Suns are going to do this series, I don't think Nurkic is going to play a ton, if the Suns are smart. Nurkic can hit the three, but he's not really a guy you're going to put in the perimeter a ton, unless he's about to set a pick for KD, Beal, or Booker. You get Rudy out there in the perimeter. That's what the Clippers did in 2021. It's what the Grizzlies did in 2022. It's what the Warriors did in 2017. It's what the Rockets did in 2018 and 2019. That's what you do with Rudy Gobert. Get him out on the perimeter. Can't guard anybody. Get him out of the paint. Clear the paint for somebody to be able to go down there and score efficiently and effectively. As for Chris Finch, listen, it's not, he doesn't have as rough of a playoff history as Rudy Gobert, but it ain't great. Okay, 2022, his first season coaching with the team, blew multiple fourth quarter leads to a, I think, inferiorly talented Memphis Grizzlies team. Ja Morant went crazy, didn't make the adjustments. They blew a lot of fourth quarter leads to the Memphis Grizzlies. 2023, a lot of tight games against the Denver Nuggets. Again, Denver certainly has a better roster than Minnesota. Even today, even this year, we've seen that in the times that they played. But some of those tight fourth quarter games, Finch is not able to make the adjustments to be able to neutralize Jokic to a certain degree. We've seen teams do it before. Finch was not able to do that in the playoffs a year ago. We'll see what he does this year against Phoenix. I think the Suns match up. Well, I don't believe in the Suns as a title contender. I think they actually match up pretty well against the Timberwolves. But playoff Rudy, playoff Finch, that we'll do the Timberwolves in. To the defending champion, Denver Nuggets, what's their biggest weakness? Health and distractions. Let me explain. The last two times Jamal Murray's been healthy, the Denver Nuggets have gone out in the playoffs no sooner than the Western Conference Finals. They got to the Conference Finals 2020, lost to the Lakers. Won the championship last year, but 2021, got hurt at the end of the season. Nuggets went out in round two. Because of the injury, didn't play all of 2022, Nuggets went out in round one. Jamal Murray has been dealing with a knee issue. This year, missed some time. Nuggets kind of struggled at the times when he's gone. We know the Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic two-man game is unstoppable. That's why they're such a great clutch team in the regular season and in the playoffs. That's why they had the run that they did a year ago. But he's been injured. Distractions. Well, Jokic is not exactly a distracting type of guy. Like, Jokic isn't, you know, he shows up for his 9-to-5 to play basketball, drop 30, 15, and 12 on your head, and go home and spend time with his horses. Okay, that's Nikola Jokic. He's a no-drama type of guy. Same with Jamal Murray, same with Michael Malone. Michael Porter Jr., through no fault of his own, is in a rough spot as it pertains to distractions. Here's the issue. His younger brother, if we have the story here, his younger brother just got arrested, or I think sentenced to like 6 years in prison for committing a crime. Do we have the story right now? Yeah, Jamal Murray's brother was sentenced to time in prison. It doesn't look like we have that right off the bat. So his younger brother is going to jail. His other brother, Jonte Porter, this week was banned for life from the NBA for gambling. Michael Porter Jr. is like as my buddy Barry Grant Jr. said in the Elephant Podcast, he's like the one non-screw-up of the family, of the Porter family. Is he going to be ready to go from a mental standpoint? Is he going to be distracted by it? And understandably so, if he is. Both of his brothers have not exactly painted the Porter family name in the greatest light in the world. Jamal Murray's knee, is it going to hold up the playoffs? That, to me, other than that, Denver's loaded. Denver's stacked. Denver's the defending champions and the favorites of the Western Conference, rightfully so. But that, if they don't win the championship, to me, is what will hold them back. And finally, to the Oklahoma City Thunder in the Western Conference, very bright future. but way too young. Okay, the Oklahoma City Thunder this year, their average age is about 23, the youngest team in NBA history to ever win a championship. You got to go back about a half century to one of the 70s Portland Trailblazers team that won the title. Bill Walton was on that team. That won the championship. I think it was 1976, 77, around that time that the Blazers won the finals. Average age of that team was 24. Youngest team ever win a title. So historically speaking, I'm not saying it's as simple as this because they got to play the games, obviously. But historically speaking, that means the Oklahoma City Thunder are done as a title contender, although I do think they're a contender this season. They're too young. Chet Holmgren has no playoff experience. Neither does Jalen Williams. Lou Dort probably has the most experience of anybody on the roster, playoff-wise. Obviously, I remember he had a great Game 7 in the bubble against the Rockets when the Thunder barely lost in the Chris Paul year. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's been in the playoffs twice, but that was his first and second years in the league when he was a kid, so we don't really know. I think he's going to be great in the playoffs. I think he's going to have a breakout postseason run with Oklahoma City, no matter how far they go, but you do have to factor in peak SGA. We have yet to see it in the playoffs. Mark Daigneault, we have never seen him either in the playoffs as the head coach of this OKC team. We'll see how it plays out. Listen, again, Oklahoma City to me over the next decade, them and the Denver Nuggets will have the most collective success. But right now, man, and props to them, they've had a great season. I think they can win a round, maybe two. But the youth is going to catch up to them at some point, whether it be against Denver in the conference finals, whether it be in the second round against the Dallas Mavericks or the LA Clippers, probably Dallas. That, to me, will do the Thunder, and they're just too young. Drink of water for a second. All right, let's transition now to the East. What's the biggest weaknesses of all the teams, potential playoff teams in the Eastern Conference? Starting with, again, the two playing teams. One of these teams won't even make it, but we'll put them up anyway. Chicago Bulls' biggest weakness, DeMar's led one decent playoff run. That's the best example I could have, or the best weakness I could find for the Chicago Bulls. Listen, I think Billy Donovan's a really good head coach. They're missing Zach LaVine, obviously. Kobe White, who had a great playing game, dropped 40 on the heads of the Atlanta Hawks. We understand that, but kind of a limited roster. And DeMar DeRozan, while he will finish top three, top four in the clutch player of the year ballot, I think he's a guy who's very capable of getting average talent at least to the playoffs. We'll see if he's able to do it tonight. But listen, DeMar DeRozan cannot be the best players on a title team. Nobody expected that in the Bulls this season, but that's what this segment is based around. Why these teams won't win the championship, that's it for the Chicago Bulls. DeMar, for as good as he is, has never led a great playoff run. To the Miami Heat, what's their biggest weakness? They got to the finals last year, but only so far culture can take you. That's the situation with the Heat. Listen, I have believed in the Heat all season long, and there's no data or evidence at all this season that shows me they can win the title, except recent history. Got to the finals in 2020. Got to the conference finals in a game 7 of the conference finals in 2022. Got to the finals a year ago as the 8 seed. This year, 8 seed. We'll see if they're able to beat the Chicago Bulls. But you're telling me this team with a beat-up Jimmy Butler, if they even have Jimmy Butler at all, is going to make a deep playoff run? I simply don't see it. Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in the NBA. Bam Adebayo's had playoff success. The Heat always seem to have a couple of guys. This year, it could have been guys like Jaime Jaquez, Nikola Jovic. Not Jokic, Jovic. Could have potentially been breakout stars, but if they don't have their superstar, at least playoff superstar healthy in Jimmy Butler, they simply don't have a chance to go deep at all in the playoffs. That will hold the Miami Heat back. To the 7-seed Sixers, what's their biggest weakness? Y'all are going to hate me in Philadelphia, but it's true. Playoff Embiid, okay? I showed the numbers earlier. Embiid goes from like a 28-point-per-game guy on 50% shooting in the regular season, at least since 2017, to about a 24-point-per-game guy and on like 40-ish, 45%-ish from the field. In an elimination game, Joel Embiid averages 22 points on 38% shooting. Like, that's who he is in the postseason. He wears down physically. He's got another injury. Listen, his numbers are off the charts since coming back from injury. The Sixers haven't lost since he's come back from injury. But you got to watch the games. Kind of like what I say with Brock Purdy. I think Brock Purdy is a very good player, and Embiid's better at his sport than Purdy is at his, obviously. But the numbers are off the charts. The numbers will tell you Brock Purdy is as good as Mahomes. You watch the games, he's nowhere near Mahomes. Joel Embiid's numbers would tell you he's healthy. Watch the games, he is laboring at the end of these games. And listen, I get it, he's injured. He's an unreliable playoff player. And if they go out in round one again, we will have to come to that consensus. MVP guy, multi-time scoring champion, great big. Not a reliable guy who can build a title team around in the postseason. This will be the only MVP in history to have not made a conference finals. We'll see if that holds the Sixers back. I think it will. this year to the Indiana Pacers. You can't score 120 every game. Okay, the Indiana Pacers led the NBA in points per game this season at a little over 120 points. Here's the problem. That ain't reality in the playoffs. You can have a hot shooting night from time to time. You can even win a series by doing that. You can't win four playoff series relying on just, you know, being able to score the basketball. The Pacers, a bottom 10 team defensively. It's, listen, if you gave the Indiana Pacers like the, I don't know, the Orlando Magic's defense or the Cleveland Cavaliers defense, oh, that's a title contender anyway. You slice it the way they can score the basketball. Tyrese Halliburton has had a great season. I simply do not trust them to make a deep playoff run because they may win a series against Milwaukee because Milwaukee's beat up and it doesn't really work over there, but you got to be able to stop somebody at some point. That will hold the Pacers back. Let's move to the five seed. Very young team, the Orlando Magic. They are, and you'll see in this graphic, a reverse of last year's Sacramento Kings. I'll explain. The Magic's biggest weakness, the Magicians on defense, the Mortals on offense. Magic, Magicians on defense, Mortals on offense. So, I try to be a little clever there. So here's the thing with Orlando. They like to play tough, physical, grind-out games that the score will look like a game played 20 years ago. Or really a high-score game played 20 years ago, if we're being honest, right? Like 91-89, something like that. A high-scoring game for the Magic would be like 100-98, a close game. You know, obviously, they struggle offensively. They're second in the NBA in defensive rating. 22nd in the NBA in offensive rating. Paolo Banchero's coming. I've been a fan of this kid since I heard him say, before he played a dribble in the NBA, and there was all this, oh, they shouldn't have taken Paolo number one. I was of the mindset they should have taken Jabari Smith. Some said they should have taken Chet Holmgren. But when I heard this kid, Paolo Banchero, and Draymond Green brought it to my attention through his podcast, saying, hey, I want to be a leader. I'm like, whoa, 19, 20-year-olds don't come in saying that. That's rare. I like this kid. And look at this, year two in the playoffs as the five seed with the potential, we'll see, to win a first-round series. Jalen Suggs, I've been a fan of this kid since his days at Gonzaga. Loved him at Gonzaga. He hasn't quite materialized in the player I thought he'd be, but listen, he's still young, give him time. Obviously, Wagner as well. The Magic really put it together. They're well-coached this season, but they can't score consistently enough to win the playoffs. Listen, again, sort of like the Indiana Pacers, sort of the reverse of the Pacers. The Pacers can score a lot of points, can't guard anybody. Magic can guard anybody. They just can't score a lot of points at all, and that will do them in the long run. To the team that they're going to be playing, the Cleveland Cavaliers, their biggest weakness is, hey, Cleveland, LeBron doesn't play for you anymore. LeBron doesn't play there anymore. That's the biggest weakness of the Cavs. So, listen, I could talk about the fact that they're sixth on defense, 18th in offense. I could talk about the fact that Donovan Mitchell hasn't had a great playoff moment in 4 years. But that's the problem with the Cavs. And the reason I use LeBron as the, you say, Bryce, LeBron left 6 years ago. Why are we talking about this? I'm talking about it because of the simple fact that the Cleveland Cavaliers have not won a playoff series without LeBron James since the first year of the Bill Clinton administration, 1993. It's been 31 years. Now, they got a shot because they're playing a very young Orlando team. We'll see what happens. I'll predict that series at the end of the show. But Donovan Mitchell, who I've been a fan of throughout his career, but last couple postseasons, yikes, he was bad, straight up bad against the Knicks last year. Wasn't good in his last playoff run with the Utah Jazz. Wasn't really good in the playoff run before that in 2021 when Utah was the one seed in the Western Conference. I don't trust Donovan Mitchell. JB Bickerstaff's a good coach, not a great one. They're still very young in some areas with Garland, with Mobley, guys like that. You know, they have a bright future in terms of their young players, but Cleveland, bad news. LeBron ain't walking through that door anytime soon. Moving to the Milwaukee Bucks, who won a championship just 3 years ago. What's their biggest weakness? The stars don't fit, and Doc ain't it. That's my bar for the day. So, listen, as far as the stars are concerned, we'll get to Doc in just a second. We'll get to the start with the stars. Giannis Antetokounmpo, to me, is undeniably one of the three best basketball players in the world. He, in what was a bad year by the Bucks standards and what Giannis has set the Bucks standards for, Giannis averaged 30-11 on 60% shooting. To me, you can't make a case that he's not top five on the MVP ballot, and he's certainly one of the three best players in the world. Damian Lillard, been a fan of his entire career, especially since he walked off and waved bye-bye to the Oklahoma City Thunder in the playoffs 5 years ago in Portland. But the fit, yet Dame is getting older, he's not a good defensive player, and the fit, as my buddy Barry Grant Jr. pointed out and was spot on about this, never noticed until he pointed it out to me. The pick and roll between Giannis and Dame does not work. Here's why. To have an effective pick and roll, you'd like your big guy to have at least an effective mid-range game. And you'd like your guard to be able to have a nice floater or be able to finish down low in the paint. these guys can't do either. Dame's never been a great finisher in his career. Certainly as he's gotten older, it's not been the case. And Giannis, for as great as he is, most dominant player within 5 feet of the basket since Shaquille O'Neal. He's never had a jump shot his whole career. And that plagues the pick and roll. So, to Doc Rivers now. It should be self-explanatory as it pertains to his playoff history. He hasn't won a championship as a coach in 16 years when he has stacked Boston Celtics roster in 08. But you also got to look at the fact with Doc Rivers. I'm throughout the stat when Doc was hired by Milwaukee a few months ago, and it's still 3 months later, doesn't make sense. It's mind-boggling, okay? Best of seven series. You got to win four times to win a best of seven series. When Doc Rivers gets the third win in a best of seven series in his coaching career, after that, he wins 33% of the time. So when Doc gets the third win of the series, so you're 75% of the way there, you get one more win, you advance. You got about a 33% chance to win. That is mind-boggling to me. But Doc, only head coach ever to blow 3-1 leads, multiple blown 2-0 leads with the Clippers, with Philadelphia. I mean, that's, I don't know if he blew a 2-0 lead with Philadelphia. I know for a fact he blew multiple 3-1 leads, two with the Clippers, one with Orlando. That's kind of who he is. Doesn't make adjustments, doesn't really take that much accountability. JJ Redick pointed that out in ESPN, you know, a while ago. So, talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. Stars don't fit, and Doc ain't it. To the New York Knicks, what's their biggest weakness? The gas is a quarter tank full. Got a quarter tank full of gas, so that's the biggest weakness for the Knicks. So here's the thing. Jalen Brunson's had a remarkable season. Jalen Brunson would be fourth on my MVP ballot. I would go Jokic, Luka, SGA, Brunson, Giannis. That'd be my top five on my MVP ballot. Jalen Brunson has had a remarkable season. Has elevated himself to a point where you got to start asking questions. Does he crack into the top 10 players in the NBA? You can make a case. You can absolutely make a case. It's a great signing by the Knicks 2 years ago in free agency. OG Anunoby, since they made that trade, when him and Brunson play, I think they're like 20-4. OG has been a perfect fit for that roster. And to a certain degree, no Julius Randle, no liabilities in the playoffs. Tom Thibodeau is an excellent defensive coach, as we know. The problem with Thibodeau, though, is he runs his players into the ground. I mean, there's a game where Jalen Brunson played all 48 minutes. Dante DiVincenzo last week played 53 minutes because the game went to overtime against the Chicago Bulls on Sunday. There was a game against my Warriors where Josh Hart played the whole game, all 48 minutes. That's cool for the regular season. It'll win you games. It'll get you the two seed in a weak Eastern Conference. It will not win you playoff series if you played that much, that long. Listen, I know these young guys from Villanova, you know, Brunson, Hart, DiVincenzo, they're still young. There's only so much the body can take over the course of an 82-game season and the playoffs. And listen, here's the thing about a quarter tank full of gas. If we're talking about like a massive like Mack truck, you can go a long way in a quarter tank. But if we're talking about a Honda Civic, well, Hondas tend to be pretty good on gas. But you know, by and large, compare that to a massive truck. It's just not going to work. So, quarter tank full of gas. The question for the Knicks is, what type of vehicle are they? Well, I guess we'll find out over the next month or two. Finally, for the Boston Celtics, best record in basketball. Their biggest weakness is they're missing a great head coach and home court advantage. Listen, it's undeniable. Joe Mazzulla is not a good head coach. He's not. We saw it last year in the playoffs against the Miami Heat. Went down 3-0 to a severely beat-up Heat roster. Again, in that Game 7 in at home, more on that in just a second, in Boston, got the doors blown off them by the undermanned Miami Heat. We've seen it with Joe Mazzulla. He's gotten by as the typical coach, gets by on a loaded roster in the Heat, or in the Celtics. I think the Nuggets are the favorites to win the title, but the Celtics absolutely have the best roster. It's certainly the best starting five in basketball. As far as home court advantage is concerned, here's the issue with Boston. Last two postseasons, the year they got to the finals 22, and last year, not that good of a home court team. So they swept the Brooklyn Nets, won both their home games there. Played the Milwaukee Bucks in round two. Only went 2-2 at home in that series. You'd think, hey, Boston, home court, passionate fan base. Only 2-2 at home against the Milwaukee Bucks in the second round 2 years ago. In the conference finals against the Miami Heat, my friends, the Boston Celtics went 1-2. At home against the Golden State Warriors. My Golden State Warriors, the finals 2 years ago, they went 1-2. Last year against the Atlanta Hawks, 2-1, but it's Atlanta with Trae Young. You need to sweep your home games against the freaking Hawks. Second round, Boston played Philadelphia 76ers, 2-2 at home. conference finals against the Miami Heat, 1-3 at home. So no matter how you slice the last two playoffs, there's not much of a home court advantage. Don't really blame the fans, to be honest, in Boston. I don't know if it's the pressure. The Celtics tend to win a lot of their playoff games with the Tatum-Brown combo on the road. We'll see if that changes, but what we had the last 2 years, I don't believe that to be the case. So that is the biggest weakness for the Boston Celtics and for all the teams that still have a shot to win the championship in the NBA. Thank you, John Rivera. This is John Rivera. We should have this soundbite on the show moving forward. John Rivera, what's in Cleveland? Joakim Noah voice. Yeah, that was one of my all-time favorite quotes ever. When Joakim Noah said, what's in Cleveland? Do you go to your family and say, hey, we're going on vacation. We're going to Cleveland, Ohio. I mean, LeBron left you twice, Cleveland. Well, let's keep it real. Left for beautiful, sunny Miami and beautiful, sunny Los Angeles. And dragged your sorry franchise to a championship in 2016. Let's just keep it real. And people say, Bryson, why don't you like Cleveland? Well, still salty about the 16 finals, admittedly. And also, their fans are obnoxious. Oh, we're going to, Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, we are going on a run. We could get to the Eastern Conference Finals. No, you ain't. I thought you were beating the Knicks last year. Got gentlemen swept. Lost the game 5 badly at home. Come on now. What are the Cavs without LeBron James? What are the Cavs without, worst case scenario, we don't have to argue about today, the second greatest basketball player who ever lived? What are they? They're a sad sack franchise. No, as I talked about earlier, no playoff series wins without LeBron James since 1993. Again, first year of the Clinton administration, 31 years ago. I remember where I was in 1993. Actually, I don't. I didn't exist. I didn't exist then. Nonetheless, there you go. Parents hadn't even gotten married by that point. That's how long it's been. All right. Transitioning now. Matter of fact, I'm gonna have to clear the graphics for the playoff strengths and weaknesses, because this is the funnest point of the NBA season. It's playoff time, baby. We got the two play-in games tonight. For the record, I've got the game. This game's probably already tipped off. I've got the Miami Heat winning tonight, even without Jimmy Butler. They're at home. The Heat do have a legit home court advantage in the playoffs. Jaime Jaquez had a great quote, and I've always been a fan of Jaime Jaquez since his days at UCLA. But Jaime Jaquez had a quote saying, like, you know, we got to get in for Jimmy. Like, he's put in so much. We got to get in for Jimmy. The Bulls, I get the Kobe White story's cool. DeMar is going to be in the top 5 for clutch player of the year, rightfully so. Billy Donovan's a good coach. I think he should have taken the Kentucky job, honestly. But that's the reality of the Chicago Bulls. And they lose tonight in Miami, just like they did a year ago. And listen, the Bulls were this close to beating the Heat a year ago. Had they beaten them, Heat wouldn't have made the finals. Maybe Milwaukee would have gotten there. Maybe Boston would have gotten there. Who knows? But thanks to the Chicago Bulls for losing to the Heat. The Heat made the finals last year. Now, I don't think they can this year because of the injury to Jimmy. Had he been healthy, that would have been a very tough series against the Boston Celtics. I think we got our playoff graphics ready to go. So let's put on the more intense background music. It's playoff time, baby. Let's go. Playoffs start tomorrow. We have the background music. There we go. We will start in the Western Conference with the 8 seed, either 8 seed series, Sacramento Kings or New Orleans Pelicans taking on the 1 seed, the youngest team in the NBA, I believe. The youngest team in the playoffs, by far, the Oklahoma City Thunder. So, listen, Oklahoma City, 57 wins this year, tied with the Denver Nuggets for the best record in the Western Conference. They got the tiebreaker due to win-loss record. SGA might win league MVP. The more I'm seeing some of these voters talking about, you know, who they favor, SGA may win this thing from Nikola Jokic. So, if he does, props to him. I'd vote Jokic. Would not have a problem at all if SGA, who leads the youngest team, you know, in the playoffs to the 1 seed, wouldn't have an issue with that at all. SGA averaged 30 points per game this season. It was phenomenal. Has a very, very, very bright future and, frankly, a bright present. Listen, this is a very young Thunder team. They got to me the coach of the year, Mark Daigneault. I think I've said for a long time, for the last few weeks, I think Jalen Williams is going to be the breakout star of the playoffs. Like, he's kind of the one guy. Everybody knows Shea from Instagram or League Pass or, if you watch League Pass, you see the guy I'm about to mention. Chet Holmgren, Gonzaga. Like, we kind of know who he is. Y'all gonna find out. This kid, Jalen Williams, is. Okay, they got actually the Thunder of two Jalen Williams. This kid is going to show up and show out in the playoffs. He's a good jumper, can get to the paint effectively. Josh Giddey is still an effective playmaker for this Thunder team. Listen, Sacramento would make it tough. I actually think the Sacramento Kings could make the series go longer than the Thunder would expect. As for the New Orleans Pelicans, if Zion's either beat up or not there at all, they have no chance to beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. So if the Pelicans win tonight, which I don't think they will, I got the Kings winning tonight against the Pelicans. But if the Pelicans win and they face the Thunder, get rid of the Pelicans quickly. I'll give New Orleans a respect of getting a road game because they tend to be much better on the road than at home. But the Thunder gentlemen sweep the Pelicans. If they get Sacramento, I'm just saying it's a tougher series than you expect. Thunder still win, but I think it goes six games. We saw what Keegan Murray, sure, but De'Aaron Fox and Keegan Murray and some of those guys in Sacramento, Harrison Barnes, did to my Golden State Warriors, taking us seven games a year ago. So that would be, again, two very young teams. That'd be a tougher series than many might think, but I'd still take the Thunder. So if the Thunder play the Pelicans, give me OKC in five. If the Thunder play the Kings, give me OKC in six. Transition now. Probably the most anticipated series of the playoffs. It is the Los Angeles Lakers and the defending champion, Denver Nuggets. So Denver's the two seed. Again, won 57 games, kind of like Oklahoma City did. Lakers won, I believe, 47 games this year. Won their play-in tournament game against New Orleans to get in. LeBron James, age 39, year 21. Averaged 25-8-7. Had his best three-point shooting season of his career at about 41%, which is crazy. Anthony Davis stayed healthy all year, is going to be eligible to be All-NBA. He will and should be All-NBA. A very strong case can be made that he should be Defensive Player of the Year this season. Here's the problem for the Lakers. They can't beat Denver. They can't. Okay, they lost eight straight games to the Nuggets, lost the last regular season game they played a year ago, got swept by Denver in the Western Conference Finals, got swept this year in the regular season. And again, it's like what I talked about on Monday. I said, regardless, given how the bracket fell into place for the Lakers, you know, coming into this week in their first playing game, regardless, their season will end before the second round. Be it a play-in tournament loss to Sacramento or Golden State, I would have picked either to beat the Lakers. I think both would have beaten the Lakers in a one-game do-or-die scenario. But now that they face the Denver Nuggets, and they shouldn't have, listen, anybody says they should have tanked their first playing game to avoid Denver, absolutely not. That would have been cowardly. That would have been a disrespect to the idea of competition, absolutely not. You play who's in front of you, you beat who's in front of you, and props to the Lakers for doing that. Here's the thing with Denver. Let's see. They have the best player in the series, Jokic. They have the best coach in the series, Michael Malone. They have the more reliable number two guy, at least in the playoffs, in Jamal Murray. They have a better starting five. They are better in the clutch, certainly against the Lakers, and certainly in the playoffs than the Lakers. They're the defending champions. Basically, every way you look, they've won eight straight against the Lakers. Every way you slice this series, they're better than Los Angeles. And for the record, some may say, well, why are we taking this regular season sample size into account when predicting this playoff series? We don't do that with other teams. Here's why we do it with this series. First time they played, opening night, Lakers, after getting swept by Denver and after all the trash talk that the Nuggets had thrown at the Lakers, opening night in Denver, ring night. LeBron, AD, Lakers, Darvin Ham get to see the Nuggets over there and thinking, man, if we had closed some of those fourth quarters, we would have beaten Miami in the finals. We'd be NBA champions. We'd be getting fitted for jewelry. Said those pesky Denver Nuggets are. They lose to Denver opening night. Then they play on Kobe's statue night. Kobe Bryant gets his first statue revealed to the public at what used to be called the Staples Center. They play the Denver Nuggets and they get beat by the Denver Nuggets on Kobe night. Then the night that LeBron James completes another milestone. 40,000 points. Never been done before. May never ever be done again, at least in our lifetimes. Denver wins that game too. So big nights for the Lakers. Ring night for the opposition. Kobe statue night. LeBron 40,000 point night. They lose all three times. Get outplayed in the fourth quarter all three times. I hear Lakers fans say, hey, listen, if we can close out the last 5 minutes of these games, here's the problem. You can't, because the Lakers are better than that in the U. By the way, the Lakers, number one team in the NBA in clutch time this season. I think they were like 29-12 in clutch games this season. Denver was second to them. But as we know, the tiebreaker, so to speak, is when they play each other, and Denver is better in clutch games than the Lakers. No matter how you slice it, Denver's a better basketball team. This will be a quick series. Give me Denver in five. I'm sorry. This is out of respect for the great LeBron James, I do not see the man losing 8 straight playoff games. I just, that's not a thing I can see in my head. This is going to be a quick series. Denver gets it done in 5. Listen, Denver's not going to win. What would that be? 12 straight games against the Lakers, but they'll win 12 of 13. They match up better against the Lakers. They had the best player in the series, best coach in the series, more reliable number 2 guy, won 8 straight times, the defending NBA champion. So, call me crazy, but I'm going to go against conventional wisdom from delusional Lakers fans. Nuggets in 5. Moving on. 3rd seed, Minnesota Timberwolves. 6th seed, Phoenix Suns. So, I don't buy into either of these teams as championship contenders, but by definition, one of them has to get to the second round. So, I don't buy into the Timberwolves because of playoff Rudy Gobert. As I talked about earlier, Rudy Gobert is the most easily exposable player in these playoffs on the defensive side of the floor, even offensively because he can't shoot. But on the defensive end, just get Rudy out the perimeter, play small, make him have to guard outside, clear up the paint. Obviously, you're able to get buckets down low, beat Rudy off the dribble. It's a very easy thing to do for athletic guards, which the Suns do have that. So, as for Phoenix, though, I don't believe in the Suns because they don't have a point guard and they're a poorly built roster in terms of the fit. KD's a great player. Devin Booker's also a great player, but he's a lesser version of KD as far as his game is concerned. And Bradley Beal is a very good player, but he's a lesser version of Booker in terms of his game. Not to mention they downgraded a head coach going from Monty Williams to a guy I like but don't love in Frank Vogel, and Yusuf Nurkic can be bullied in the playoffs. Or my guy's much smaller than him and Draymond Green. Point is, somebody has to win. What I look at in this series is this, is the fact that, first of all, the Phoenix Suns over the last 10 games, or the last 8 games, rather, I thought their goose was cooked. I thought they might not get out of the play-in tournament because their last 10 games, I remember talking about in the show, man, you got Denver, you got these same Minnesota Timberwolves who they blew out just this past Sunday. They had a tough games on their schedule. They had Sacramento, tough games. They went 6-2 in that stretch. That's got to mean something. It's got to mean something to the fact that Kevin Durant is statistically one of the better playoff performers we've seen in the 21st century. 2-time finals MVP. I get that was in Golden State with Steph. That's got to matter to a certain degree, right? Devin Booker, as long as he's not in an elimination game, he's good. He's really good. Put together some awesome shooting splits last year. And I think that the Phoenix Suns are going to do what every team does in the playoffs against Rudy Gobert. Expose him. Beat him off the dribble, get him in the pick and roll, get him on KD or Booker or Beal. Let them beat him, clear up the paint, potentially for some lobs to Yusuf Nurkic, set him up down low. This to me goes 7 games, because both teams are deeply flawed. But give me the Suns in 7. They win a game 7 in Minnesota. Phoenix advances to the second round this will be the 4th year in a row. I do think their season likely comes to an end in round 2. But the Suns do beat the Minnesota Timberwolves. They simply match up better. And as much as I love Anthony Edwards, right now today, I'm going to trust Kevin Durant just a little bit more than I trust Anthony Edwards. Suns in 7 in a back and forth weird series, very flawed series because of how flawed these two teams are. But Suns in 7, they get to the second round. Finally, in the Western Conference, we got a rematch. These teams have faced twice. One series went 6, the other went 7. This series has the potential maybe to do so as well. The 5-seed Dallas Mavericks, the 4-seed Los Angeles Clippers. So both teams are in very different spots right now. Luka Doncic might win MVP. If he doesn't, he'll finish top 3 on most ballots this year. Averaged 34-9-8, I think it was. 34-9-9, crazy numbers. Kyrie Irving, first year in, gosh, since the Cleveland days, since we haven't had drama with this particular player, that's been nice. Listen, Dallas, ever since they traded for Daniel Gafford, they've been much better defensively. They play a much higher tempo pace, much better pace up and down the floor of basketball. Jason Kidd has made that particular adjustment. Then you have the Clippers. Kawhi's hurt. Not sure if he'll play in the series. Russell Westbrook, will he start? Will he not start? We'll see. Paul George has been much better in the playoffs than he gets credit for. The whole playoff P thing is not a moniker for being awful in the postseason, but he has had his struggles. He'd be much better as a number 3 option in Golden State with another option potentially than he is as the number 2 option with the Clippers, and most notably, James Harden. Playoff history, it ain't great. It's quite bad, actually. One team's playing awesome, the other team isn't. One team matches up better against the other team than the other does. And by the way, one player has, statistically speaking, owned this team in the postseason. His name is Luka Doncic. Folks, this could be a quick series. This could be a laugher. Mavs in five. Gentlemen sweep. Dallas gets rid of the Clippers real quick. Kawhi's hurt. Don't trust Harden. Don't trust Russ. And Paul George is going to be left on an island. Paul George, you can come to the Bay Area. Come join the Golden State Warriors. We would sure love to have you. Mavs in five over the LA Clippers. It's a quick series, folks. To the Eastern Conference now. So, again, I think the Miami Heat are going to eke out a win against the Chicago Bulls tonight. But even if they don't, we'll predict either series, whatever the case may be. So if it's the Bulls against the Boston Celtics, this one should be over as quickly as a series can be over, which is a sweep. Listen, DeMar DeRozan is an excellent player. They don't match up. Not only do they not match up well against Boston, don't match up at all. Vucevic can get bullied down low. You'll have to make him guard the perimeter. Tatum, Brown, get him in the pick and roll. Obviously, Drew Holiday can do his best against DeMar DeRozan. DeMar has really struggled in the playoffs against physical guard defenders. Drew Holiday is the very definition of that. There's no case. I love my man John Rivera. Shout out to John, Fan Perspective Podcast with Henny Dre. Bulls have no chance to win this series. If they win tonight, Celtics will sweep the Chicago Bulls. If it's the Miami Heat, out of respect for Heat, because Jimmy Butler, if Jimmy Butler were healthy, this is a 7-game series. We saw it a year ago and the year before that, frankly. Jimmy Butler's hurt. Out of respect for Eric Spoelstra, out of respect for Heat culture, I'll give the Heat a game, but this series should go no further than five. Celtics in five over the Miami Heat if they match up. If they match up against the Chicago Bulls, Celtics in a sweep. Celtics in four. Either way, Boston will get to the second round in relatively easy fashion. 2-seed New York Knicks, 7-seed Philadelphia 76ers. I think no doubt the best series of the Eastern Conference playoffs. Maybe an even better series, at least I think it'll be, than the LA Lakers and the Denver Nuggets. Because I think the Lakers are going to go down in five to the champs. This one, though, you got a Philadelphia 76ers team that's won 9 straight ever since Joel Embiid came back. You got a New York Knicks team that's been red hot over the second half of the season. A Jalen Brunson that's averaged 30 a game ever since Julius Randle went down. And New York Knicks team who, ever since OG Anunoby was traded there, have lost like 4 games when he plays at least, which is incredible. Dante DiVincenzo has been a great fit there. Josh Hart has been good ever since he put on a Knicks uniform as well. You've got two really solid coaches, Tom Thibodeau, Nick Nurse, so I don't think this is going to be a situation where a coach makes a massive blunder. This is another series where I buy into the Knicks as a title contender more than I do Philadelphia, but this to me is going to be similar to the Phoenix-Minnesota series in the sense that, man, both these teams are really, really, really flawed. For the Sixers, playoff Embiid, not good, especially in elimination games. For the Knicks, as I talked about earlier, my playoff weaknesses, I think they have about a quarter tank of gas left. And the question is, are they a big car or a big Mack truck, or are they a little car? We'll see. Will the tank of gas, a quarter tank of gas, get them to the finish line, at least in this series against Philadelphia? Here's what I think is going to happen. Philadelphia, to me, has the better roster and have just as good of a coach, maybe even a better coach than Nick Nurse. They have the best player in the series, Joel Embiid. For that reason, they're going to push New York hard. The hardest they've been pushed this season. Jalen Brunson, though, without Luka Doncic, even if you go back to the games that Luka missed in the first round against the Jazz, Jalen Brunson had a 40-point game against Utah, played very, very well, was excellent in the playoffs last year. I think he's going to do the same this year. No reason to believe he won't. He's been red hot over the second half of the season. The Knicks have some good, rangy, nice perimeter defenders that will fare well for them against Maxey, Tobias Harris, Kelly Oubre. Obviously, down low against Joel Embiid. Embiid has the potential to do some damage on this team. But it'll go to a game 7, Madison Square Garden, and I simply do not see a scenario in which any of these scenarios don't happen. A, the Knicks don't play great at home in a game 7 in the first round at MSG with those great, great fans. And what I don't see happening in a game 7 is Joel Embiid playing well. We've seen him in 3 game 7, he's lost all 3, and he's underachieved in all 3. So give me Knicks in, actually, my bad, I undersold them. Knicks and 6. I don't know why I was thinking Madison Square Garden, Knicks and 7. That was completely an error on my part. Knicks and 6. It rhymes. It sounds good. I think it's what's going to happen. Man, I thought about revising that Knicks and 7. That graphics is Knicks and 6. So, yeah, give me the Knicks in a 6-game win over the Philadelphia 76ers. Moving on to what I think could be a shocking series for some and not for myself. Indiana Pacers, Milwaukee Bucks. This is a weird one because Indiana can't guard anybody. Milwaukee is not a good defensive team. Indiana's worse. Indiana is not bottom five in the NBA in defense, but certainly bottom 10 when I looked at defensive efficiency earlier today. Tyrese Halliburton's had a great year. This team's been really good ever since they made the move to get Pascal Siakam. Miles Turner's been good. They're well-coached. Rick Carlisle. As for the Milwaukee Bucks, they've been in a free fall as of late. Giannis Antetokounmpo went down with a non-contact calf injury. Doc Rivers has been two games under 500 since taking over this Milwaukee job. And Damian Lillard hasn't been as efficient as we've grown to know and love him in his years with the Portland Trailblazers. Not to mention Milwaukee's old. Not to mention Milwaukee locker room is a mess. Not to mention that Giannis Antetokounmpo once again is hurt. Not to mention that Doc Rivers is a disaster in the playoffs. I don't think the Indiana Pacers are going very far in this postseason, but they went 4 out of 5 against the Bucks this season. That's going to matter for something. Give me the Indiana Pacers in 6 over the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis Antetokounmpo, if he plays at all in this series, which I think he will play his final game as a Milwaukee Buck in Indiana. I don't even know what their arena is called. Is it like Gainbridge Fieldhouse, I think, is where the Indiana Pacers play. Nonetheless, Pacers will win the series there in Game 6 in Indianapolis, and the Bucks will go home, and Giannis will go elsewhere. Give me the Pacers in 6. Listen, they're not a title contender by any stretch, but they match up well, and that's what the playoffs are about. They are about matchups. Finally, Orlando Magic, Cleveland Cavaliers, probably going to be the least watched playoff series just because there's not a whole lot of star power. Nonetheless, an intriguing one because you have two tremendous defensive teams and very limited offensive teams. Cavs are a little bit better offensively. Magic are a little bit better defensively. That, to me, is going to make for a 7-gamer. So, both coaches are solid in this series. Donovan Mitchell's had success in the past in the playoffs. As of late, not so much. As for the Orlando Magic, kind of similar to Oklahoma City, very young, not as talented offensively, not even close, frankly, to the Thunder. But Paolo Banchero's had a very successful sophomore campaign. Jalen Suggs has been a good fit. Wagner as well. Really like the way the direction that this Magic team is going. The Cavs have some good young players as well. Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, probably still one of the best shot blockers in the league, although Wemby has certainly passed him in that regard. 7-game series, tough, physical, I don't want to say 90s-style Eastern Conference playoff series, but about a notch below that. I don't think we're going to see like 72-69 final scores. At least I pray to God that's not the case. Otherwise, I may not even watch this series. But it'll go 7. It'll go back to Cleveland. If I know anything about Cleveland sports, it's that they come up short when you expect them to come up big. Give me the Orlando Magic winning this series, doing so in a Game 7 in Cleveland, and bringing much happiness and joy to a city that's experienced plenty of it because Disney World is just like 15 minutes up the road from this arena. But give me the Orlando Magic over the Cleveland Cavaliers in 7 games. They will advance to the second round to take on the Boston Celtics. So that's what I've got. So one more time, I'll go and play up my playoff predictions. So if the Thunder play the Kings, I think it's actually a tough series for OKC because of the Kings, you know, quickness, three-point shooting, and otherwise. Thunder in 6 over Sacramento if that happens. If the Thunder play the Pelicans, Thunder in 5. If there's no Zion or a limited Zion, it's going to be a quick series. To the Nuggets and the Lakers, people are billing this as an entertaining series. As far as the final scores of the games, it will be. As far as what we'll see on our television, it will be. As far as the overall outcome, the future generations of basketball fans will look at this the same way they did the series a year ago, which is Lakers couldn't close late. Denver could. Nuggets in 5. Suns will beat the Timberwolves in 7 games. Again, I think they match up the Suns match up better against the Timberwolves than otherwise because of the fact that they can get Rudy Gobert on the perimeter. And I do trust Frank Vogel a little bit more than I trust Chris Finch. And as great as Anthony Edwards is and is going to be, give me Kevin Durant. Certainly in the first round of a playoff series. We'll see beyond that. Finally out west, Mavs in 5. It's quick. They eliminate the Clippers in short order. Clippers are beat up. Dallas isn't. Luka owns the Clippers historically. And the Mavs are playing literally as well as anybody, as any team in the NBA over the last 30-odd games or so. So give me Dallas in 5 over the Clippers. To the Eastern Conference, if the Celtics play the Bulls, it'll be a sweep. What are we talking about? If they play the Heat, it would go 7 if Jimmy were healthy. Jimmy is not healthy. This will be a 5-game series. The Celtics will win. The Knicks and Sixers, for some reason earlier, I thought I'd put Knicks in 7. I may change that later today, but this prediction says Knicks in 6. It rhymes. It sounds good. And I don't trust Joel Embiid in the playoffs, and I certainly don't trust Joel Embiid in elimination games. I think that's the only way for the Sixers to win this series is if they get up big, like get up like 3-0 or something, which that's not going to happen. So Knicks in 6 over the Philadelphia 76ers. The Pacers will upset the Bucks in 6 games. They will ensure that Giannis Antetokounmpo will play his final game as a Buck. This series, and as controversial, as crazy as that sounds, you talk about the locker room issues, you talk about the bad fit at head coach. Even if they fire Doc, that'll be four head coaches in three seasons for Giannis. He's not going to want that. And let's be real, the fit with Dame hasn't worked, and Milwaukee isn't exactly a free agent destination, a free agent hotspot for superstars especially. So Milwaukee will go down that series. They will struggle to stop the offensive attack of the Indiana Pacers, although these will be some very high-scoring games. And finally, games that will not be high-scoring, Magic and seven. I know Cleveland's the sexy pick. I went with Cleveland a year ago against the Knicks. Regret it to this day, but I don't regret the fact that the Cavs lost. I mean, what are we talking about? I'm a Warriors fan. I want to see the Cavs go down. Haven't won a playoff series without LeBron since 93. What are we talking about here? Magic and five. Oh, sorry. My bad. Way off. Magic and seven. Cavs season will end in Cleveland, so that'll be very enjoyable. All right, that's all the time we have for today's show. Appreciate everybody stopping by. As always, be sure to catch Carving Up Live on Monday. Boy, we have a lot to talk about then. Tons of NBA playoff stuff. The week of the NFL draft. Cannot wait. Loaded. And I mean loaded week ahead with NBA and NFL draft stuff. Check us out on Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific time, right here on Twitter, as well as the Carving It Up YouTube channel and the Grid Network YouTube channel. Of course, be sure to like, share, comment. Please take 2 seconds out of your day. Hit that big red subscribe button down there if you're on YouTube. We would greatly appreciate it. If you have subscribed, please tell your friends about it, your family about it. Just don't tell your sleeping cat about it. And if you have not subscribed, hey, just takes you a couple seconds. Big red subscribe button down there. Hit that, and you're part of the Carving It Up family. We would greatly appreciate it. Also, just as importantly, be sure to go subscribe to the Grid Network. That is GRYD, the Grid Podcast Network, right here on YouTube, as well as any and everywhere you get your favorite podcasts, via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, any and everywhere you get your favorite podcast. Fun show today. All NBA stuff. I think LeBron's going to leave the Lakers, should leave the Lakers if they go out in round one to Denver, which they will in five games. Embiid, pressure, Warriors, tough decisions to make. I love Klay. They can't bring Klay back, especially given what he's reportedly commanding. Something like the Drew Holiday deal is what's been reported. So see about that. Playoff weaknesses and playoff predictions in the first round. So very fun stuff. All right. I will see you on Monday. Please stay safe out there. Please be sure to take care of your physical as well as your mental health. It's so important. And please be sure to contact your local state representatives and senators to demand change for gun violence in America, no matter where you lean. Right, left, center. This is an issue that impacts us all, and no matter what anybody on either side of the aisle tries to tell you, there's no one solution. There's a number of things that we need to do and should do to prevent this from happening. We've got to do our part as citizens to address this, so let's make it happen. All right, I'll see you on Monday. A lot of NBA stuff, some draft stuff potentially. I will see you then. Stay safe out there, y'all. God bless y'all. Peace out. Weird not having the Warriors in the playoffs, man. Just doesn't feel right. Thanks so much for watching the show on YouTube, and be sure to go click that big red subscribe button and check out the other clips and full shows from Carving It Up Live, as well as our other incredible content creators here on the Grid Network.